Good afternoon, everyone. This meeting will come to order. I hope everyone had a wonderful Pride weekend. Welcome to the June 30th, 2025 regular meeting of the Land Use and Transportation Committee of the San Francisco Board of Supervisors. I'm Supervisor Myrna Melgar, Chair of the Committee, joined by Vice Chair Supervisor Cheyenne Chen and Supervisor Bilal Mahmoud. The committee clerk today is Mr. John Carroll, and I also would like to express my gratitude to Jeanette Engelau from SFGov TV for staffing this meeting. Mr. Clerk, do you have any announcements?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Please ensure that you've silenced your cell phones and other electronic devices you may have brought with you into the chamber today. If you have any documents to be included as part of any of today's files, you can submit them to me. Public comment will be taken on each item on today's agenda. When your item of interest comes up and public comment is called, please line up to speak along your right-hand side of this room. Alternatively, you may submit public comment in writing in either of the following ways. First, you may send your written public comments via email to me at john.carroll@sfgov.org, or you may send your written comments via U.S. Postal Service to our office in City Hall, and the address is 1 Dr. Carlton B. Goodlett Place, room 244, San Francisco, California, 94102. If you submit public comment in writing, I will forward your comment to the members of this committee and also include your comments as part of the official file on which you are commenting. Items acted upon today are expected to appear on the Board of Supervisors agenda of July 8th, 2025, unless otherwise stated.
Thank you so much, Mr. Clerk. Please call item number one.
Agenda item number one is an ordinance amending the park code to apply the park code to certain parks on Treasure Island and Yerba Buena Island to allow application of the park code to certain additional properties operated and managed by the Recreation and Park Department subject to approval of the Recreation and Park Commission and making clarifying changes.
Thank you, Mr. Clerk. We are now joined by Yael Golan, from Deputy Director of Planning with the Recreation and Parks Department. Welcome.
Thank you, Supervisor. Good afternoon, Supervisors. Yael Golan, Deputy Director of Planning for the Recreation and Park Department. The item before you today is an ordinance to amend the park code to apply to additional properties the Recreation and Park Department manages but does not own, including Treasure Island Development Authority, or TIDA, open spaces, and Office of Community Investment and Infrastructure, or OCII, open spaces. I'm joined today by Mark Sletskin, Deputy Director of OCII, who is here today in support of this item and is available for any questions. Bob Beck, the director of TIDA, has shared a letter in support of this amendment with this committee. The San Francisco Recreation and Park Department oversees over 230 parks, open spaces, and recreational facilities. RPD has begun, or will soon begin, managing parks and open spaces at several redevelopment project areas, and there are over 40 non-RPD open spaces that we manage on behalf of other city agencies. RPD and TIDA are working together on a plan for RPD to take over the maintenance responsibilities for Treasure Island and Yerba Buena Island parks starting July 1st, 2026. We have also assumed maintenance responsibilities for OCII's Mission Bay parks in July 2023 and will begin managing OCII's Hunters Point Shipyards parks this week on July 1st. With official jurisdictional transfers of these sites to follow in the FY25-26 fiscal year. Since OCII properties have not yet undergone a jurisdictional transfer to RPD, and TIDA properties are not currently planned to transfer to RPD's jurisdiction, a park code amendment is required to allow the park code to apply to these properties so RPD can manage and maintain them consistently with how we manage and maintain all other parks in the city and keep them clean, safe, and well-managed as our other parks. Currently, the park code outlines overall rules and regulations for the use of city parks and recreational areas under RPD's jurisdictions, which include guidelines for park operations and maintenance to allow for beautiful, clean, and safe parks, permitting requirements for events and activities for the public to easily reserve park amenities, enforcement of park rules, and provisions for public safety and emergency situations. The primary purpose of this park code amendment is to apply the park code to TIDA and OCII properties that Rec Park manages or will soon manage by implementing a revision to the park code to allow the Recreation and Parks Commission to apply the park code to specified properties. It authorizes the department to lease or operate for recreational purposes. The approval process would require the Recreation and Parks Commission to review and consider approval actions on each such agreement at a public hearing and to authorize the application of the park code to the specific properties. As mentioned in the previous slide, the park code covers rules for park operations, permits, public safety, and enforcement of park regulations. This amendment will ensure consistent standards across all RPD-managed parks and streamline the process for managing new open spaces. This concludes my presentation. I am available for any questions, as is Mark Slutskin from OCII. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Ms. Golan. I don't see anyone on the roster with questions. I just have to say this is really exciting. I'm very much looking forward to this wonderful new space on Treasure Island. It's going to be awesome. So with that, let's go to public comment on this item, Mr. Clerk.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Does anyone have public comment for agenda item number one? If so, please come forward to the lectern at this time. And Madam Chair, it appears we have no speakers.
Thank you so much. Public comment on this item is now closed. Supervisor Chen.
Hi, thank you, Chair. And I would like to make a motion to move this item number one, with positive recommendation to the full board.
On the motion offered by the Vice Chair that this ordinance be recommended to the Board of Supervisors. Vice Chair Chen.
Aye.
Chen, aye. Member Mahmoud. Mahmoud, aye. Chair Melgar.
Aye.
Melgar, aye. Madam Chair, there are three ayes.
Okay, thank you so much. Thank you so much for presenting. Let's go to item number two, please. And just say that for item number two, three, and four, we are going to have, they're related, but we're taking them all separately.
Agenda item number two is an ordinance amending the planning code to update eligibility requirements for the priority processing program for certain commercial uses, including enabling eligible uses in the North Beach Neighborhood Commercial District, the North Beach Special Use District, the Calle 24 Special Use District, and formula retail uses with fewer than 20 establishments to participate in the program, and updating scheduling and extension requirements for the priority processing program. Reaffirming the planning department's CEQA determination, making findings of consistency with the general plan and the priority policies of planning code section 101.1, and findings of public necessity, convenience, and welfare pursuant to planning code section 302.
So I just hesitated, Mr. Clerk, because we were expecting Director Tang. Oh, there she is. I'm sorry. Do you need like 30 seconds to catch your breath?
Sorry about that.
Okay. I should have looked to see that you were here before. Let's give her a minute.
Apologies.
Okay, I want to welcome our director of the Office of Small Business, the incomparable Katie Tang. Director Tang, I just want to say thank you for all your work. You were emailing me at midnight, so I know that you were preparing for this presentation, but also you are always so available to help us, you know, support our small businesses and make sure people get what they need from our city. So thank you so much for being here.
Thank you, and apologies for the delay. And also, of course, want to thank the City Attorney's Office, because I know they had to work over the weekend as well to prepare some of the amendments today. So just to get started on item two, and I know we're going to get into some of the other items that are part of a Permit SF permitting reform package to support small businesses in their journey. We'll just go over the item two for now. So at a very high level, the priority processing program for certain commercial uses, we are aiming to consolidate what currently are two different priority permit processing programs. There's one that exists at the Planning Commission through resolution. I know Chair Melgar is very familiar with that one, as well as one that is currently in the planning code. The idea behind that really is just to make it easy and clear for small business applicants to know that it's right there in the code, what the priority permit processing eligibility criteria is and what it entails, instead of having to look into two different places. You'll see on the screen that San Francisco certainly has a reputation for a challenging permitting process, which we are trying to reform through this Permit SF initiative. And so one of the key things as part of this program is really allowing that certainty in timing for when a business that needs a conditional use authorization from the Planning Commission to know that they will get a hearing scheduled and calendared within 90 days of a completed and accepted application. So that is really what the goal is there, as well as transporting some of the eligibility criteria from the Planning Commission version into the code. After Aaron Starr from Planning Department goes over the recommendations, we'll also be back before you with some amendments based on some of those recommendations.
Thank you, Director Tang. Welcome, Mr. Starr.
Thank you very much. Aaron Starr, Manager of Legislative Affairs for the Planning Department. So the Planning Commission heard this last Thursday on June 26th and recommended approval with modifications. The Commission's proposed modification was to remove the Cayo Benta Cuatro Cultural District, North Beach SUD, and North Beach NCD from the priority processing program. I will also note they passed a resolution rescinding their 2015 CB3B program, as is called for in this ordinance as well. Thanks.
Thank you. So is that it for you, Director Tang?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'll just restate the amendments that Aaron essentially had put into the record, just to request that the Commission adopt those amendments regarding the two different neighborhoods.
Okay. Thank you so much. Mr. Clerk, with that, I don't see anyone on the roster, so let's go to public comment on this item.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Land Use and Transportation will now hear public comment on agenda item number 2 related to priority processing for certain commercial uses. If you have public comment for this item, please line up to speak along that western wall. And if the first speaker wants to come forward to lectern, I'll start your time.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Chairman Melgar, Supervisors Mahmood and Chen. My name is Nick Ferris. I serve as President of the Telegraph Hill Dwellers. And on behalf of THD, and on behalf of Cayo Benta Cuatro, the North Beach Business Association, and Chinatown Community Development Center, we respectfully request that the Land Use Committee amend the proposed priority processing legislation to exclude the North Beach Neighborhood Commercial District, the North Beach Special Use District, and the Cayo Benta Cuatro Latino Cultural SUD. The Planning Commission, as you just heard, unanimously recommended these amendments. Not just that, there has been zero public outreach and education to our community. Both of these districts are thriving and have a healthy mix of locally owned businesses. In North Beach, we have less commercial vacancies today than we did pre-pandemic. We have led the post-pandemic economic recovery and maintained the small business character of our commercial district. Bottom line, the process is working. And as far as we're concerned, it doesn't need fixing. Please amend the legislation to exclude North Beach and Cayo Benta Cuatro from this legislation. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Let's have the next speaker, please.
Hi, good afternoon, Chairman Melgar and Supervisors Chen and Mahmood. My name is Romelin Schmaltz, and in addition to my 20 years as a resident, I have been a regular event producer in North Beach for 15 years and was a brick and mortar gallery and event space owner-operator on Green Street and Columbus Avenue from 2014 until the pandemic. I was also a designer, a curator, and a director and head of marketing for the massive North Beach First Fridays Art Walk and Merchant Walk from 2019 until 2022, and I currently work in art design and marketing for local artists and musicians and creative business folks. That is to say, I know my neighborhood, its businesses and their owners, its trends over decades, its needs, and its vulnerabilities. Every day I am there with my people. And I join with the Mission's Cayo Benta Cuatro, North Beach Business Association, the Chinatown Community Development Center, and Telegraph Telegraph Hill dwellers to respectfully request that the Land Use Committee amend the proposed priority processing legislation to exclude the North Beach NCD, the North Beach SUD, and the Calle 24 Latino Cultural District SUD. These amendments were unanimously recommended by the Planning Commission last Thursday, and we have had two thriving districts whose wide variety of locally owned businesses has created a safety net for its residents' needs. North Beach has far fewer commercial vacancies today than we have had before the pandemic because of how well this is working. It's really working. And as I did with North Beach First Friday's reopening in the August of 2020 with wild, safe success, our local business owners have bravely led the post-pandemic economic recovery and maintained small business character of our commercial district. That takes a world of cooperation and dedication. So the existing planning process has been working, and our businesses are bringing health and vitality to our commercial corridors and the greater neighborhoods as a direct result. Please amend the legislation to exclude North Beach and Calle 24 from this legislation. I appreciate your time.
Thank you for your comments. Let's have the next speaker, please.
Well, all has been said. Teresa Flandrick, North Beach Tenants Committee. I am here joining, of course, all of these organizations that were already mentioned in requesting that you amend this and exclude North Beach and Calle 24. I want to say that the existing process is indeed working. Our special districts are just, they are special. And we only survived the pandemic because of our many, many small businesses where we could get the essential needs of our households met. We lost our 39 bus that serves North Beach and Telegraph Hill. Many seniors and families were unable to then get down to the bigger markets, and we were so fortunate to have so many different markets within walking distance in North Beach. So it is working. We want to continue that. We survived and are thriving. We need this in our community to remain also for Calle 24. Again, it is, you know, we need to be excluded from this legislation. And so I'm asking you to please do that, to please help us remain an existing, thriving community. And thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you for your comments. Next speaker, please.
Buenas tardes, supervisors. My name is Susana Rojas. I am the executive director of Calle 24 Latino Cultural District. Calle 24 was created because of the mass displacement caused by the gentrification of our communities and the removal of our cultural assets. Our conditional use district were created to give us a chance to thoroughly weigh in, work, and integrate businesses to the corridor to benefit them and the community in a more meaningful manner by meeting 4 out of 6 cultural conditions. Our corridor today has one of the lowest vacancies rates in the city, with 6 vacancies out of 151, which makes it 4% as of June 23rd of 2025. We compared sales tax revenues for the third quarter of 2019 versus the same quarter in 2023 and found that during the 4-year period, the Mission sales tax revenue was only down 1.29% compared to 39% for downtown and 12.75% for the rest of the city. The Mission recovery appears to be outpacing the city at large and other neighborhoods, but not North Beach. North Beach and Calle 24 are competing when it comes to recovery, and that's a great thing. And we are here to respectfully request that Calle 24 and North Beach are removed. And thank you, Director Tang, and thank you to the Planning Commission for making that recommendation. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Do we have anyone else who has public comment for agenda item number 2? Madam Chair.
Thank you so much. Public comment on this item is now closed. Before I go to you, Vice Chair, to make the amendments, you're going to make the amendments, right? I just wanted to say a couple things. First, thank you to staff for this legislation. For folks who haven't actually read the legislation, it really seeks to clarify and simplify what is right now two different regimes through which people get permits for businesses. And, you know, I can't speak about North Beach. It is not, you know, a commercial district that I am all that familiar with, other than just shopping there and eating there. But I do know Calle 24. I spend years of my career doing technical assistance and support to small businesses. I think it is working for some. And I think it's not working for others. I personally think it's a mistake to exempt these two neighborhoods from this. And who I think it doesn't work for is non-English speaking folks, immigrants who are starting a small business, although I recognize that for people who already have businesses, it, you know, sort of like they've already been through it, they've figured it out already, so that's not a problem. However, it is not my district. I don't represent either District 9 or District 3, and I have spoken to both supervisors, and they are in agreement with exempting. I will just say that even though I did watch the Planning Commission discussion and realize that it was a unanimous vote, after a lot of conversation, I think people were confused by this because it is confusing, and that's the point. It's very confusing. So for somebody trying to open up a new business who doesn't speak English or is from a different country, as many, many of our small businesses are, it can, you know, you have to hire an expediter or have somebody from the Mission Economic Development Agency or Calle 24 hold your hand to like figure it out. And so is that the best public policy? I don't think it is, but you know, because the supervisors for both districts are okay with that, I will vote to support those amendments exempting those two things. What I will just say to folks who care about these corridors is I think, you know, it's important to look at, you know, not just today and yesterday, but also tomorrow. I think that's really important too. Okay, with that, Supervisor Chen.
Thank you, Chair. I just want to say I am very supportive of the effort that in our city trying to make our permit process more transparent, easier to navigate, and faster. I think this is the city is really in agreement with, like, this is how we can continue to make sure that we have a thriving city. But also, I think we need to strike a balance. And I think, especially when it comes to protecting the unique character of our neighborhood and also our commercial area and cultural districts. And I know that our communities, especially in this cultural district and neighborhood business corridors, they know what is best for their neighborhood. And it's especially, I think, after facing, in cultural district, right, facing years of trauma and displacement, I think our city should continue to work with extra care and respect with these districts. So with that, I want to also express my support for the legislation and also continue to support the amendment to Cabo with the recommendation from the Planning Department. Thank you. And you want to make a motion for both together? Amendment and then, okay. And I would like to make a motion to include the amendment and together as a whole to, with a full board with a full committee positive recommendation to the full board. Thank you.
We have a motion from the vice chair that the ordinance be amended as presented and then recommended as amended to the Board of Supervisors. On those motions, Vice Chair Chen. Chen, aye. Member Mahmoud. Mahmoud, aye. Chair Melgar. Melgar, aye. Madam Chair, there are three ayes.
Okay, thank you. That motion passes, thank you. Mr. Clerk, let's now go to item number three. This is exciting because we've been talking about this for years.
Agenda item number three is an ordinance amending the building and planning codes to extend the awning amnesty program to apply to existing unpermitted signs and gates. Amending the planning code to remove design standards for gates, railings, and grillwork on ground floor street frontages of non-historic buildings in neighborhood commercial, residential, commercial, and mixed-use districts. The ordinance affirms the Planning Department's CEQA determination. It makes findings of consistency with the general plan and findings of public necessity, convenience, and welfare.
Okay, Director Tang, the show is yours.
All right. Thank you, supervisors. So for this next item here, I have a PowerPoint on the screen. Thank you very much. So at a very high level, the proposal before you today is to allow businesses with security gates that are in existence to participate in the amnesty program, which has been going on for about 2 years. That was the result of several hundred complaints filed against businesses for having installations of a variety of things, including awning signs and gates, done without permits. And then also additionally allowing the security gates to be 100% solid. And that would be an amendment to the planning department's requirements there. Currently, there are about 100 small businesses that are facing a planning code violation for the security gates installed without a permit. And without the changes that you're going to be voting on today, they would actually not be able to participate in the amnesty program. A lot of them would actually have to remove the gates and then either reinstall or do without it, which can be very costly. We've heard from a lot of businesses that, unfortunately, we're just at a state right now where many of them could probably raise their hands and tell you that they have faced repeat vandalism, burglaries, multiple occasions, and that the solid nature of the gates is what helps them sleep at night. Currently, the scissor gates are the preferred kind of design standard. However, again, we understand kind of what these businesses are facing on a daily basis. The photos you'll see here on the screen just show a few of the existing gates that are installed on long businesses on Grant Avenue and Mission Street. And so many of them are out there already, and we'd like to, them to just be able to close out these complaints so that they don't eventually lead to notices of violations for these properties. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Aaron Starr from Planning Department.
This one's a little simpler. The Planning Commission heard this on June 26th and recommended approval. Happy to answer any questions if you have.
Okay, so I don't have any questions. I don't see anyone on the roster. Supervisor Chen.
Thank you, Chair. Small business, it's definitely something that I prioritize and value a lot, and I've done a lot of work with, especially in the Chinatown with the small business. And I think, especially also now in District 11, it's also a lot of mom and pops, immigrant-owned shops. And a lot of the merchant has come to my office and asking for like protection against graffiti, against breaking, and against also unfair for long existing 50 years gates and signs. So I think this ordinance answers all, and this is really a big change that is supporting our small business. And I want to thank the director and thank the department and working closely with our small business community to come up with the ordinance. And thank you.
Thank you so much, Supervisor Chen, and thank you, Madam Director, and Mr. Starr for the work. I, as Director Tang knows, would rather take awnings and gates out of the planning code altogether and just leave them in the building code, but this is progress, so I'll take it. Thank you so much. I do think that, sometimes these things get weaponized, and I don't like it. And I think it is, particularly the small mom and pop and immigrant-owned businesses that suffer the most out of these things. And a lot of times it is to comply with the aesthetics of some and not the businesses that actually work really hard day in and day out to stay afloat. So with that, let's go to public comment. And again, thank you, staff.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Land Use and Transportation will now hear public comment for agenda item number 3 related to existing awning, sign, and gate. Please come forward to the lectern if you have public comment for this item.
Hi, good afternoon, Supervisor. My name is Kiefer Hu. I'm the Director of Employment Training and Economic Development at Staff Hub for the Elderly. We provide service to small business in the last 5 years, and we want to share the support of this legislation that extend the awning MST and amending the planning code to remove the sign standard for gate railing and grill on ground floor. The small businesses are still suffering since the pandemic, and just last week, one of the small businesses in Chinatown were being vandalized again for 3 times. If is continue enforcing the transparency security gate, that will lead to another vandalism to happen again for the next few years. And that will deeply impact the cost of time and money for small business. Even though the vandalism relief grant is still available, but it will waste the city's unnecessary budget, especially when the city is facing a budget deficit. So we strongly hope the supervisors will support this legislation and support local small business. Thank you.
Thank you. Do we have anyone else who has public comment for agenda item number 3?
Before we close public comment, I note that Michelle Andrews is here from Supervisor Sauter's office, who is a co-sponsor on the legislation. So if you wanted to comment on it.
Yeah, thank you, Chair Melgar and committee
members.
Before
you do that, Madam Chair, do you want me to have this be part of our time to public comment period, or?
Is it gonna take you more than 2 minutes?
No.
Okay.
Michelle Andrews, legislative aide for Supervisor Sauter. Supervisor Sauter is proud to co-sponsor this legislation. Just adding on to what Director Tang said, we've heard from many small businesses in our district, especially in Chinatown, that have been faced with unexpected enforcement complaints and requirements to change decades-old gates and signs, many of which have been in place since before they even moved into the building. So we're very supportive of this legislation. The ability to have 100% solid gates is also incredibly helpful for the businesses that experience repeated vandalism and burglaries. We should be listening to small businesses when they tell us what they need to be able to do to stay open in our city. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Andrews.
Thank you. Do we have anyone else who has public comment for agenda item number 3? Madam Chair.
Okay, with that, public comment is now closed. Do you want to make a motion, Vice Chair?
Thank you, Chair. I would like to make a motion to move file number 250539 with positive recommendation to the full board. Thank you.
On the motion offered by the Vice Chair that this ordinance be recommended to the Board of Supervisors, Vice Chair Chen. Chen, aye. Member Mahmoud. Mahmoud, aye. Chair Melgar.
Aye.
Melgar, aye. Madam Chair, there are 3 ayes.
Thank you. That motion passes. Let's go to item number 4, please, Mr. Clerk.
Agenda item number 4 is an ordinance amending the planning code to, first, principally permit certain non-retail sales and service uses, including general office, design, professional business services, and non-retail professional services, and trade offices on the ground floor in the C3 districts through December 31st, 2030, after which such uses will be conditionally permitted. Second, principally permit retail sales and service uses on the second floor and above in the RC districts. Third, principally permit non-retail sales and service uses on the second floor and above in the RC districts. Fourth, update transparency and fenestration requirements for ground floor activity uses and exempt child care facilities, homeless shelters, mortuaries, religious institutions, reproductive health clinics, and school uses from those requirements. Fifth, define an interior sign and the applicable standards for interior signs. Sixth, exempt interior signs of 6 square feet or less and business and identifying signs painted on building facades from a permit under the planning code. Seventh, modify the definition of a non-residential use for the purposes of certain development impact fee waivers, as well as affirming the planning department's CEQA determination and making findings of consistency with the general plan and findings of public necessity, convenience, and welfare.
Thank you so much, Mr. Clerk. Welcome again, Director Tang.
Thank you very much, supervisors. So I apologize, this one will be maybe a little bit longer, but at a very high level for this item, we could think of it as 4 different kind of buckets of changes. One has to do with storefront transparency, and you'll see on the screen here to the far left that the high-level proposal is to exempt certain critical uses from the storefront transparency requirements. This was sparked after we were contacted by a childcare facility on a busy commercial corridor where they have covered up their entire storefront, really out of concern for the privacy for the children that they serve. They're very upset by the requirement from the city that they actually have to leave a certain percentage open and visible to the public. While we were at it, we realized that there's some other critical uses that could benefit from that same exemption, including schools, homeless shelters, mortuaries, religious institutions, and reproductive health clinics. And so that is part of the proposal to exempt them from the storefront transparency requirement. Moving over to the right side of the screen with regards to business signs, the proposal is to remove the permit requirement for business signs that are painted on building facades, as well as for window signs and interior signs. The two photos that you'll see here are true real-life examples where these businesses received violations from the city for putting these up without a permit. So on the center photo, the vinyl stickers with the Chinese characters on the facade, as well as the neon sign in the window on the far right photo, those are examples where business owners had to take time out of their busy day to come to the permit center and try to resolve the issue by filing a permit with the city. Next slide here. With regards to downtown uses, the proposal is to principally permit certain non-retail sales and service uses on the ground floor, specifically within the C3 district, so downtown commercial districts, through 2030. So for a very limited period of time, to provide more an incentive. Some of these companies that are downtown, they're located there, they're really trying to create more amenities for the employees as an incentive to draw people to come back to the office in person and to activate these ground floor workspaces. You'll see some of the photos here, examples where some of these companies or organizations are trying to do that already. The photo shown here is on Montgomery Street, where there's some co-working spaces as well as a cafe. The one in the center bottom is an example of one that had to recently go through the Planning Commission for such approval. We do think this is really important because the more people who come and work in person, especially downtown, it helps the surrounding small businesses that are located there and that have been suffering also since more people have been telecommuting. So not only is this good for, again, the companies that want to better amenitize their buildings, it's also really important for the small business owners in that surrounding area. And then moving on to residential RC districts, the proposal is to ease the filling of non-ground floor vacancies within RC districts by principally permitting retail sales and service uses and non-retail sales and service uses at the second floor and above. And there's an example where we are working with an industrial design studio on the second floor along Van Ness. There was a complaint against them, and without the change, they would actually not be allowed to operate there any longer. And so for this item, we have sent over to the committee members a number of amendments that we'd like to propose. These were all discussed at the Planning Commission. And huge shout out to Deputy City Attorney Julia Gwalkel-Nelson for all of her work on these, the number of amendments that were made. I'm just going to walk them over quickly, but I believe you have a summary sheet in front of you. With regards to signs, we are actually going to eliminate reference to interior signage, and instead we more clearly define what a window sign is, and that means a sign that is touching only the inside or outside of a window. Therefore, anything that's interior inside is no longer a sign and would not have to follow the requirement for planning approval. We have worked with some businesses where they installed a sign inside their business, but was visible from the street, and they got they received complaints about those. So we wanna eliminate those kind of scenarios. And because we did that, we also had to make a lot of subsequent changes, which is why you'll see that repeated throughout various districts, that we just repeat the change in reference of how a window sign is defined. The other clarification made is how the window sign area is measured. And so the current practice is that it's an area as a function of the window, the specific window where the sign is located. We are now clarifying it is the sign is the percentage is the area of a function of all the individual's ground floor windows and any glazing on doors, regardless of which window or door the sign is actually located on. And then we're just making consistent that the permitted area of the window sign can be one-third of the totality of all the windows and glazing on doors versus some cases in the planning code it's one-third and some it's one-fourth. So we just want to make that all very consistent. And then also we clarify that any application, so the applying of a sign, does not require a planning approval. So any essentially non-structural signs will not require planning approval. And application of signs could mean things like painting. You've applied paint to a facade, as well as vinyl stickers. So those are some very easy examples. And so those are all the changes reflected regarding signs. And then moving on to transparency, we are proposing to remove interior and the window sign exception to the transparency requirements. And then there are some other clarifying edits, really just to clarify that again, there are no changes regarding transparency outside of business operating hours. And then moving on to ground floor uses, we did realize that there needed to be an amendment made to Section 124 of the Planning Code to exempt new gross floor area created in the C3 district through a change of use on the ground floor of space that was devoted to uses previously excluded from gross floor area per Section 102. And also exempt C3 districts from Section 145.4, which had to do with required ground floor commercial uses, again, temporarily through December 31st of 2030. And then next, with regards to the Rincon Hill Downtown Residential, that's RHDTR district, the proposal for the amendment is to exempt from required ground floor commercial uses buildings in the RHDTR district that are, one, designated landmark buildings or contributory buildings within a designated historic district pursuant to Article 10 of the Planning Code, or two, listed on or determined eligible for the California Register of Historical Resources by the State Office of Historic Preservation. And then also to amend Section 803.9 of the Planning Code to principally permit all uses in certain historic buildings in RHDTR subject to certain exceptions. And that would be in perpetuity. And then finally, for residential commercial districts, which are RC districts, would be to allow catering and laboratory uses on the ground floor within RC districts with the conditional use authorization. And so those are the amendments before you today. And then I'm going to turn it over to Aaron Starr from the Planning Department.
Thank you, Director Tang. Aaron Starr, Manager of Legislative Affairs. The Planning Commission heard this last Thursday on June 26th and recommended approval with modifications. I will not go over the modifications again, but they were basically what that was. So I'm happy to answer any questions if you have them. Thanks.
Okay. Why don't I have Ms. Andrews come up for Supervisor Sauter now?
Thank you, Chair Melgar. Michelle Andrews again with Supervisor Sauter's office. Supervisor Sauter is also proud to co-sponsor this important legislation to give more options to activate vacant spaces downtown. In order to bring more people downtown, we need to continue being creative in our strategies to both bring people back to the office and make our streets more vibrant. This legislation is a direct response to this particular moment that downtown is currently in, as reflected by the 2030 sunset date in it. It will help us get to the 24/7 vibrant downtown that we all want to see, which will include bustling offices, retail, restaurants, homes, and much more. And in the spirit of meeting small businesses where they're at, we also want to make it as easy as possible for businesses to operate without having to deal with enforcement complaints for trivial things such as having painted a sign in their window. These kinds of stringent permit requirements for window and interior signage can make or break a small business's ability to succeed. So this legislation will help reduce a significant permitting hurdle so that business owners can focus their time on running their business. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Andrews. Okay, Supervisor Chen.
Thank you, Chair Melga. I definitely also am very supportive of the effort to create a vibrant, thriving downtown. And I understand that having more flexibility is part of our vision. There have been some questions about whether this legislation will allow residential units to be converted to other use. From what I see, the legislation permits retail and non-retail services above the ground floor only in vacant commercial suits, so it's not applied to residential units. So as it stands now, the city still requires the conditional use permit to convert a residential unit to any other use. So from what I understand, this requirement does not change under this proposed legislation. Can I get a confirmation on that?
Confirmed. Residential units are still subject to 317, so you need a CU to remove them.
Wonderful. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Supervisor. Supervisor Mahmoud? Oh, I'm sorry. Of course. Let's go to public comment on this item.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Land Use and Transportation will now hear public comment related to agenda item number 4. This ordinance makes changes to the fenestration, transparency, and sign requirements. If you have public comment for this item, please come forward to the lectern at this time. And Madam Chair, it appears we have no speakers.
Okay. Public comment is now closed. Now, Supervisor Mahmoud.
Thank you. I would like to make a motion to move the amendments as described by Director Tang forward for a vote.
The motion offered by Member Mahmoud that the ordinance be amended as presented. Vice Chair Chen. Chen, aye. Member Mahmoud. Mahmoud, aye. Chair Melgar.
Aye.
Melgar, aye. Madam Chair, there are 3 ayes.
Now, these amendments are substantive. Would you like to make a motion to continue this?
I'd like to move to have this item be continued to the call of the chair.
Okay.
On the motion offered by Member Mahmoud that the ordinance be continued to the call of the chair as amended, Vice Chair Chen. Chen, aye. Member Mahmoud. Mahmoud, aye. Chair Melgar.
Aye.
Melgar, aye. Madam Chair, there are 3 ayes.
Okay, that motion passes. Thank you all. Okay, getting through it all now, let's go to item number 5, please.
Agenda item number 5 is an ordinance amending the Public Works Code to streamline the approval of certain encroachments in the public right-of-way, to establish a registration requirement in place of all permit requirements and fees for cafe tables and chairs and display merchandise, and to eliminate minor encroachment permit requirements and right-of-way occupancy fees for appurtenant building features, amending the administrative code to exempt cafe tables and chairs and display merchandise from the shared spaces program, and affirming the planning department's CEQA determination.
Thank you. And before you present on this item, Director Tang, I want to welcome President Raphael Mandelman from District 8 to the Land Use and Transportation Committee, and the floor is yours.
Thank you, Chair Melgar. I took the long walk down the hallway, not just because I miss seeing your smiling faces, but because I absolutely am just delighted by this legislation. It does basically 2 things that I think are in many ways overdue, and the only sadness that I have is that I didn't think to make this happen at some point in the prior 7 years on the board. But during COVID, I remember being on lots and lots of calls as we figured out the shared spaces legislation, and during that time we also waived table and chair fees, I believe, and that went into the mists of history, and I was always sad about that. But this legislation sort of poses a deeper question, which is, why exactly do we require permits for this activity, which is actually beneficial? And shouldn't we be getting rid of not just the fees, but the underlying permit in the first place? And so I think that is fantastic. And then I also, thank you, committee, and thank you, colleagues, for your support of the Beyond the Front Door legislation and moving on from ABE. But again, there is, from that legislation, we did manage to waive one of the fees associated with some of the work that has to get done to make entrances accessible. But the much saner and more reasonable thing to do, and the greater relief for property owners and small businesses who need to and have to comply with accessibility requirements, is actually to not have them go through this whole process with the city getting the permit in the first place. And so I love this. I think this is amazing, and I want to thank Director Tang and the mayor and Rich Hillis and all the folks who've worked on the whole package of Permit SF, but in particular, I really love this one and wanted to just express that. And now I will go back to my office. But thanks, colleagues, for allowing me to gush about this legislation for a moment.
I'm so glad you got a little bit of joy there from the Land Use and Transportation Committee, President Mandelman. Thank you. Okay, Director Tang.
All right. Thank you. All this excitement for tables and chairs. And I also want to acknowledge Public Works Department, because this really does represent a new way of doing things. And we really appreciate their collaboration on this new path forward with tables and chairs. So on the screen here, you'll see that the current process, if you want to put out tables and chairs or also sidewalk merchandise display, involves submitting a permit application to Public Works Department. You also have to pay a fee. The typical kind of average fee is around $1,000, and then there's annual renewal as well. You do have to submit a certificate of insurance and also produce a pretty detailed site plan to the city. So under the new process, we would be requesting a registration that would be done online for businesses. There would be no fee involved. This would really just to be getting the contact information for the business owner in case there are any issues or complaints that arise, so that Public Works can contact the business owner for those issues. And then the rules really don't change around how you can place these tables and chairs. You still have to maintain the path of travel so that you maintain accessibility, as well as putting the tables and chairs inside and out each night. So a lot of those rules will not change. The applicant would then, the business owner would attest to understanding what those operating guidelines are. And then in terms of enforcement, the administrative penalties, which we are putting into this legislation, would accrue or kick in essentially on the second and subsequent validated and unaddressed violation. So we would still be giving business owners the opportunity to understand how they can correct whatever was not working and address them before any admin penalties would accrue. Currently, there are approximately 215 businesses in the city that hold tables and chairs permits. So that gives you a sense of how many people will be really excited about this, as well as I'll just tell you, when we're doing outreach in the community, everyone is super excited, maybe doubly more so than even Supervisor Mandelman, and they can't wait for this to take effect. So this will be the same process for the sidewalk merchandise displays as well. And then the other piece of this legislation has to do with minor encroachment permits. Also really want to acknowledge Public Works Department, and I know Alaric de Graffenried is here in case you have any questions for Public Works. But right now, there are a couple things where they're very common installations for businesses, as well as mixed-use buildings, that then would require them getting a minor encroachment permit from the Public Works Department. Some of these are shown in the photos. I'm not sure if you can see the arrows here, but they include things like water spouts or even gates that protrude a little bit. They're attached to the facade but protrude a bit into the public right away. ADA push actuators. So sometimes they can't be installed directly on the facade but might have to be a little bit right up against the building but in the public right away. And so the legislation before you would exempt a very specific set of items or installations that would no longer need to obtain a minor encroachment permit from Public Works Department. They would still need to have the approvals through Department of Building Inspection, so that will not go away, but the separate permit that also entails not only a fee, a one-time permit fee, but also an annual assessment that would go away under this proposed legislation. Some of the applications for accessibility-related sidewalk improvements can take anywhere from 6 to 12 months, so we're really trying to, again, save people time and money by avoiding getting the minor encroachment permit for these specific items. So with that, I think there's no planning recommendation on this one, so I'll turn it back to you.
Great. Thank you so much. I do not see anyone on the roster. I think this is, reinforce what President Mandelman said, it's super exciting to see this and potentially transformative, so that's really great. Let's go to public comment on this item, please, Mr. Clerk.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Land Use and Transportation will now hear public comment related to agenda item number 5, cafe tables and chairs. If you have public comment for this item, we have a table set up for you. No one's here for public comment, Madam Chair.
Public comment is now closed. Supervisor Mahmood, would you like to move this?
I'd like to make a motion to send this item to the full board with a positive recommendation.
Motion offered by Member Mahmood that the ordinance be recommended to the Board of Supervisors. On that motion, Vice Chair Chen. Chen, aye. Member Mahmood.
Aye.
Mahmood, aye. Chair Melgar.
Aye.
Melgar, aye. Madam Chair, there are three ayes.
Okay. Thank you. I think Supervisor Engardia wanted to be here for the next item, item number six, but he's not here. So why don't we go ahead and present us.
Would you like me to call item number six, Madam Chair?
Yes, go ahead.
Agenda item number six is an ordinance amending the planning code to streamline and simplify the process for obtaining and extending temporary use authorizations, implement standard requirements for any temporary use authorization, and permit as temporary uses seasonal political campaign offices for up to 1 year and extend the maximum time period for a pop-up retail temporary use to 3 years. It affirms the planning department's secret determinations and makes findings of consistency with the general plan and planning code section 302.
Okay. Welcome again, Director.
All right, don't worry. This is the last one you'll hear from me. As part of the Permit SF legislative package, this one has to do with temporary use authorizations. And our goal here is really to simplify and clarify pop-ups and temporary use that you can engage in. Currently, under the planning code, you'll see here on the far right graphic, there are about 19 different categories. So it can be a little bit confusing about which category you should fit under. So really our goal here is to consolidate, simplify. We want to clarify what retail pop-up use actually means, and I think expand it a little bit as well. And also, I don't know if you want to pause and... Okay, I'll continue. All right. We also want to better clarify the duration that each of these TUAs, these temporary use authorizations, can be in place for, as well as the maximum amount of total time. So, for example, if you had to renew a pop-up use. And so examples of where temporary use authorizations are helpful, and I know Supervisor Engardia just joined, but the Outer Sunset Farmers Market is one example where it takes place in an RH1 district where typically retail sales and service cannot occur. And so that is a very useful tool to have a temporary use authorization for that. And we have a photo here of Gumbo as well, and they were able to open up, Gumbo Social, and they were able to open up a shop over on 3rd Street after having popped up many times at the Outer Sunset Farmers Market and still do. So that's been a great outcome of the TUA usage there, as many businesses like to test out concepts before they then go ahead and open up their own brick and mortar location. So I think that is it, and then I'll turn it over to Aaron Starr for the Planning Department recommendation.
Mr. Starr, before you come up, I just want to welcome District Force and sponsor of this legislation, Supervisor Joel Engardia. Supervisor, would you like to say a few words before I bring Mr. Starr up?
Sure, thank you. I just want to say that I obviously wholeheartedly support this and hope to have your support for the mayor's efforts for Permit SF. And just I want to add, Katie had mentioned, or Director Tang had mentioned, about some pop-ups that were successful. Another one, Smoke and D's, got their start at the farmers market, and they then did a booth at the night market, and now they're a brick and mortar on Irving Street, so which is wonderful. So I just want to see more of that. They have lines out the door, so it's a good success story.
Thank you, Supervisor. Okay, now Mr. Starr, thank you.
Thank you. The Planning Commission heard this on June 26th and recommended approval. I will note that this absolves you of the sin of being not in compliance with the planning code. All of your political offices were illegal, and so this legalizes them. Happy to answer any questions. Thanks.
Mine was in my garage, so. All right. Thank you so much. Let's go to public comment on this item, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Land Use and Transportation will now hear public comment related to agenda item number 6. If you have public comment for this item, please come forward to the lectern at this time. And it appears we have no speakers, Madam Chair.
Okay, with that, public comment is now closed. Supervisor Mahmood.
I'd like to make a motion to send this item to the full board with a positive recommendation.
On the motion offered by Member Mahmood that the ordinance be recommended to the Board of Supervisors, Vice Chair Chen. Chen, aye. Member Mahmood. Mahmood, aye. Chair Melgar.
Aye.
Melgar, aye. Madam Chair, there are 3 ayes.
Okay, thank you. That motion passes. Okay, thank you. We got that through that pretty quickly. Thank you so much, team. Let's go to item number 8, please.
You want to go to 8 or number 7?
Sorry, 7.
Just don't want to skip one. Agenda item number 7 is an ordinance amending the planning code to provide conditions for repair and relocation of existing non-complying structures within required yards, grant unpermitted residential structures within yards that were constructed before 2003 non-complying status, and allow accessory structures up to 10 feet in height and 120 square feet within required yards, amending the building code to exempt accessory structures up to 120 square feet from building permits, affirming the planning department's CEQA determination and making findings of consistency with the general plan and findings of necessity, convenience, and welfare.
Thank you so much. We have the sponsor of the legislation, Supervisor Engardio, here with us. Supervisor Engardio, you may remember that my story was in the paper when I tried to put a pergola in my backyard, and I couldn't figure out what the requirements were. It's pretty confusing. So thank you so much for doing this.
Absolutely.
The floor is yours.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Chair Melgar, members Chen and Mahmood. This legislation was born out of the frustration that even the Chair Melgar felt, and many District 4 residents who I represent who are dealing with lots of headaches when they decide to improve or fix their long-standing accessory yard structures. On the west side, I know many homeowners that have backyard garden sheds, decks, and stairways, and these structures have existed for decades without inspections, complaints, or stamped permits. But the moment a homeowner decides to start on a basic improvement project, they're required to navigate our complex building and planning codes. And this can be a daunting experience and one that could cost months of delays, thousands of dollars, or critical life safety issues. And in subsequent conversations with planning staff, I learned this issue was not limited to those living in single-family homes. It's a ubiquitous challenge faced by building owners across the whole city. So imagine receiving a notice of violation for a rear yard encroachment that puts a home renovation project on hold or halts the reconstruction of a crucial emergency exit stairway for tenants. It should not have to be this way. And you shouldn't be required to have a law degree to know what can and cannot be done with your rear yard. So we need to make the government less confusing and more accessible to regular residents. And a simple home improvement project like a storage shed, a deck, or a renovation of a sunroom should not require a public hearing, countless hours of navigating code with building and planning staff, or the prospect of steep fines and penalties. So this legislation intends to clarify what people can do with their rear yards. I want to thank exemplary planning staff Audrey Merloni, Corey Teague, and Deputy City Attorney Rob Coppola for their thoughtful collaboration with my office on this legislation. Also want to thank Liz Waddy and Mayor Lurie's staff for incorporating this into the Mayor's Permit S initiative. We all know yards are valuable open spaces, and I know staff diligently explored every possible project scenario to ensure the right controls remained in place to protect these spaces. And with that, I would like to discuss the scope of planning staff's requested legislative amendments. So requested amendment number 1, amend section 136C23 to clarify that detached structures allowed in yards may not contain sleeping quarters. Requested amendment number 2, allow non-complying structures to be relocated so they retain their original setback distance rather than requiring a new one. Allow for the installation of new fire-rated walls without requiring a variance, as they are usually at or directly adjacent to property lines. Requested amendment number 3, strike the variance application refund provision. And that's it. These amendments are not yet ready to be introduced, so I will request the chair motion to continue this item until the land use meeting on Monday, July 14th. So thank you, Chair Melgar and members of the committee.
Thank you, Supervisor Engardio. I will make a motion to continue it to the call of the chair because I'm not sure what that meeting looks like, and I dare not do it outside of Jen Lowe's purview. Can I just ask Ms. Merloni a question? What is, when we exempt sleeping quarters, what does that mean?
Thank you, Chair Melgar. Audrey Merloni, Planning Department staff. Sleeping quarters essentially is our way of being able to put an enforcement mechanism into the idea that we do not want these to become dwelling units. So the term that we chose was sleeping quarters. A similar term is used in the state building code. We're essentially just trying to make sure that if a complaint is filed about somebody sleeping in one of these accessory structures, we have something that states what qualifies and what doesn't qualify. Sleeping quarters felt like a fairly understandable term to us so that we can go out and enforce against there being beds in these places where people are actually sleeping overnight.
Yeah, I understand that, but how about like a hammock? Or, you know, I'm Jewish, in the fall we do Sukkot and we sleep out there, you know, that one night. So I'm wondering, who assesses that and what is
absolutely
that?
Yes. Well, our enforcement is not perfect with anything that is alleged to be an illegal dwelling unit. Uh-huh. However, if you had something where somebody sleeps out there once or twice a year, or more, but essentially they're not living out there.
Okay.
We want to make sure it's clear that this is not to be used as a dwelling unit. And so in theory, a neighbor who sees somebody sleeping out there, even if it's on occasion, could file a complaint. And our enforcement planners would ask to conduct a site inspection. And if there were more permanent sleeping quarters visible in the accessory structure, we would require that those be removed.
But a hammock out there would not
be. Considered a sleeping structure.
Okay. Thank you so much, Ms. Merloni. And thank you, Supervisor Engardio. I don't see any other questions or comments from my colleagues. Let's go to public comment on this item, and then I'll make the motion to continue it.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Land Use and Transportation will now hear public comment related to agenda item number 7. If you have public comment for this item, please come forward to the lectern and you may begin.
Eileen Bogan, Coalition for San Francisco Neighborhoods, speaking on my own behalf, concurring with the committee to continue this item. This item was heard at the Planning Commission just last week with both the sponsor and his chief of staff present in person. Last week's Planning Commission hearing had 23 items and lasted 7 hours. Item 23 was the upzoning hearing. However, this item was item number 17. Having this minor code correction, which was clearly non-urgent, on a packed agenda could be seen as abuse of discretion. Here we are, just four days later, with this minor and non-urgent legislation on the Land Use and Transportation Committee agenda, just 4 days before the 4th of July holiday. This could also be seen as abuse of discretion. Even for this minor legislation, there are issues. On page 3, line 11, the text should read 1/2 bathrooms, not bathrooms. This is just one of the issues. To be clear, this legislation will not change the narrative in District 4. As Caesar said when he crossed the Rubicon, the die is cast. Thank you.
Do we have any further comments for agenda item number 7?
Okay, public comment on this item is now closed. I'd like to make a motion that we continue this item to the call of the chair, please.
On the motion offered by the chair that the ordinance be continued to the call of the chair, Vice Chair Chen. Chen, aye. Member Mahmoud. Mahmoud, aye. Chair Melgar.
Aye.
Melgar, aye. Madam Chair, there are 3 ayes.
Okay, thank you. And now let's go to item number 8, please, Mr. Clerk.
Agenda item number 8 is an ordinance amending the planning and subdivision codes to allow separate conveyance of certain accessory dwelling units and associated primary residences as condominiums. It affirms the Planning Department's secret determination and makes findings of consistency with the general plan and adopts findings of public necessity, convenience, and welfare.
Thank you so much. Again, welcome, Supervisor Engardio. The floor is yours.
Thank you. Thank you again, Chair Melgar and supervisors. Since I was last here on this item, April 21st, my office has been in consultation with stakeholders and advocates. It's always been my goal to make sure this legislation does nothing to lessen existing tenant protections, while also creating opportunities to add infill housing within our neighborhoods. Colleagues, I would like to request the committee make the following amendment to this legislation. On page 14, line 6, strike this line entirely, which reads, "or no certificate of occupancy has been issued for the ADU." It's my understanding this amendment is not substantive, but I defer to Deputy City Attorney Brad Roussey to confirm. And thank you, Chair Melgar, members of the committee. I hope to have your support on this amendment and to send this item as a committee report to the full board with recommendation.
Thank you, Supervisor Engardio. Ms. Marloni, did you have a presentation? Can you tell us what the Planning Commission did?
Okay. Absolutely. We did present on this on the 21st, okay. But I'd be happy to give you a summary. Generally, the Planning Commission recommended a host of amendments that were made to the ordinance, and we thank the supervisor for doing so. The amendments were generally within the ilk of trying to make sure that we were not displacing any tenants and that we were protecting unauthorized dwelling units. Would you like me to break down the amendments that the commission recommended?
Sure.
Great. So at that hearing in February, the commission recommended, one, to limit the program to existing single-family homes and existing condominiums that are proposing to construct a new detached ADU through the state program. Secondly, to limit the program to new construction single-family homes and new construction condominium projects proposing to construct a detached or attached ADU through the state program. The second recommended modification was to move the state-mandated requirements to the subdivision code. The third was to make several clarifying amendments. The first was to clarify that an application to construct an ADU may be submitted concurrently with the condominium application. And the second is to clarify that eligible ADUs and their primary units must meet the same planning code standards that are applied to all other condominium conversion projects. So that's section 1383 of the subdivision code. And again, I believe that the second version of the legislation incorporates the spirit of those amendments as they were written to the record.
Okay. Thank you so much, Ms. Marloni. I see that Vice Chair Chan has some comments. I will just say thank you, Supervisor Engardio, for your work on this. As you know, the family special use, family and senior housing special use district that was passed by this board 2 years ago allows for subdivision of ADUs. I think that this is consistent, to have, this option for property owners as well. I appreciate your work on it. My concern was that it be standardized so that folks, know what to expect depending on the regime that they choose. So with that, I just thank you, Ms. Marloni, for all of your work on it and for making sure that we are following the spirit of what we're trying to do. Supervisor Chen.
Thank you, Chair Melga. Thank you, Supervisor Engardio. I do support this with our goal of this legislation is to incentivize the production of ADUs, especially in neighborhoods characterized by single-family homes, which is also District 11. We have 62% home ownership. The legislation also provides a pathway to enable single home families to recoup their investment when they construct a new ADU and increase the supply of additional entry-level housing units. With that, I also want to thank you for that effort. And I also really appreciate that we further look into it, that we do not undermine tenant provisions. So, and I really appreciate you assure that this is also our goal. And I also continue want to make sure that we incorporating amendments as requested by the community, and that will ensure that tenant protection during the process of all this ADU condo conversions are all comply. And thank you so much for your effort and making more what we call it's house rich, cash poor community have more options. And thank you.
Thank you, Supervisor Chen. The reason why we had included the possibility to do subdivisions in the family and senior SUD was because, you know, in addition to the reasons that you listed, Supervisor Chen, to recoup your investment and to allow for more affordability for property owners, there is also the possibility of subdividing and also passing on property to your heirs while you're alive, which has some significant tax advantages. And so it does present a way for families to, hang on to generational wealth, particularly in neighborhoods that have been excluded from that, which such as, District 11 and other neighborhoods that have low incomes but high homeownership rates, like, Excelsior, Bayview. So I think this is a good thing. Let's go to public comment because I do have an amendment as well that I have spoken with a supervisor. So with that, Mr. Clerk, let's go to public comment on this item.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Land Use and Transportation will now hear public comment on agenda item number 8 related to condominium conversion of accessory dwelling units. And I do want to mention one thing that I failed to mention when I was calling this item, but Supervisor Ingardio did point it out, and that is that this item is on our agenda as a potential committee report, and it may be considered by the Board of Supervisors tomorrow, July 1st, 2025. First speaker, please.
Good afternoon. I'm Mitch Lomerber with the Affordable Housing Alliance and the San Francisco Anti-Displacement Coalition. Two issues in 2 minutes. The first is we raised some time ago, which is that we would like to protect tenants who rent single-family homes, and we would also like to protect tenants who live in ADUs where the subdivision may not happen concurrent with the construction of them. For that reason, we have suggested that the applicant owner applying for the subdivision be an applicant owner for 3 continuous years, which is in fact what we provide for in every other condo conversion in San Francisco. That wouldn't seem like to be a tall order since we're talking about long-term house-rich, cash-poor people. 3 years should be pretty easy to meet and would provide some protection for tenants. So appreciate working on that particular concept with Supervisor Chen. We're disappointed that we don't have support on the committee for that at this time, but we do intend to follow up with it in the future so that these conversions can be parallel to all the other conversions. The second issue is new language that we first saw at 7 p.m. last Wednesday. Well, we saw all this at that point, so it's been kind of a hurry up and rush and stop and go, and it's a little frustrating. But this is that there's new language on page 19, I think it's line 4, that says that these ADU conversions will be exempt from every other than the enumerated sections of Article 9. That's really a lot of stuff. That's really overbroad. There's stuff in Article 9 that we just need administratively, like the application, and what if the application is denied, the process to appeal, and various other things like that. There's also stuff in Article 9 that clearly is not applicable, so you wouldn't even need that, but that needs to be looked at. That is kind of a big deal. So I appreciate you taking a look at that at this 11th hour. And there I go. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. To the next speaker, please.
Eileen Bogan, Coalition for San Francisco Neighborhoods, speaking on my own behalf. I would like to concur with the previous speaker. It's my understanding there was very little outreach to organizations such as his on this, and they just received the amended copy last Wednesday. So I'm urging that the item be continued and also that it not be heard tomorrow. As a committee report, I don't see the rush on it. And there is new language in there that was about Article 9 that was not in there originally and that they have really not had the time to review. So I agree again with Mr. Omerberg that this item is not quite ready for prime time, and I would urge it be continued and not be heard tomorrow as a committee report. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Next speaker, please.
Hi, good afternoon, supervisors. My name is Brianna Morales with the Housing Action Coalition as their community organizer. And I'm really just here to express my support for this legislation and thank Supervisor Engardio and all of the supervisors and planning staff that have put in a lot of time into this really practical, thoughtful plan. Kind of speaking for myself as a young person who had lived in San Francisco for 10 years and had to leave due to the short housing options that were available to me, I would love to see a more complex and abundant variety of housing options, especially in places where there hasn't been that variety. I've tried for years and years to live on the west side of San Francisco, and it ended up not being realistic for me. But I was able to, you know, like so many other San Francisco residents, live in someone's house and have a separator by a sheet and people living in the living room. And I think that doesn't always work for people. And there's lots of families and individuals that would like to see more housing options, especially when the opportunity of home ownership is on the table. I did not think that I would be able to move towards that option personally, and so I'm really excited to be able to sit here and support something that brings that option closer to reality. So we really hope to see more of those varieties of housing options in the future, and really appreciate the thoughtfulness in terms of making sure that tenants are not displaced and tenant protections, and to see the conversations keep happening so that we get closer to that healthier ecosystem in San Francisco. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Do we have any further commenters for agenda item number 8? Madam Chair.
Okay, public comment on this item is now closed. Colleagues, I just wanted to address a couple of things that we heard from public comment. The first one is about the look back. And, you know, I have had lots of conversations with Mr. Omenberg and folks in the tenants' rights, groups. I think the issue for me is that there are separate look back requirements in different legislations and different. Some of it is in the condo conversion ordinance. Some of it is in the SUD that we passed a couple years ago. As we are looking at all of the legislation that is coming through with the rezoning of high resourced area, there's going to be yet another. So I would rather wait on that until we can have like one standard way of doing it that doesn't advantage the state program over our local program, or has unintended consequences, which is why, you know, I am reluctant to support that today. As to the other issue, which is what Mr. Omenberg talked about, starting in line 2, page 19, and the sentence starts, any ADU subject to conversion, all the way down to line 6 to dwelling units. I am wondering how you would feel, Supervisor Engardio, about just striking that whole paragraph out altogether. I think it's already approved out as to form without it, because it's been added since Wednesday. So if that's okay, that would be a non-substantive amendment since we're striking it out, and that would just take care of that issue.
Yep, I agree with that. That sounds fine.
Okay, Mr. Rusty, what do you think about that?
Deputy City Attorney Brad Rusty, yes, that amendment has been prepared, and I can sign off on that, and it would be non-substantive. I actually had one question for Supervisor Engardio. I know you mentioned the amendment striking on page 14, line 6, or no certificate of occupancy has been issued for the ADU. I believe you mentioned that one. There was another amendment that I think was included in for today, which is on page line 9 of that same page.
Oh, I see.
Under a little I, is constructed after January 1st, 2020. I believe that is also
right.
An amendment for
That's
today.
Right. I'm sorry, I missed that. So I read that. So line 9. Where it says is constructed after January 1, 2020.
Right. Yes. That's also, those two amendments are not substantive and they can move forward today.
Thank you. And I think Ms. Maroney did Yes. Okay. Thank you. Mr. Omenberg.
That paragraph includes a bunch of rights. It's new language here that protects their tenant protections, referencing 1387, 1390, 1391, 1392, 1393. Those are actually rights for tenants in these buildings that were one of the things that we discussed in the letter from the ADU. The language that is problematic really is just the just line four and no other provisions of this article. That's the language that's so overbroad and problematic.
Okay, so what you are actually recommending is that we strike out starting at the comma after 1393?
Yes, the words "and no other provisions of Article 9 of this code." That's what's so overbroad.
And what about after the period? I will defer to the sponsor because...
I don't think that's problematic, but yeah. It's because we're trying to address several different situations here in this legislation. Existing single-family homes with a new ADU, but we're also addressing existing condominiums that might want to add an ADU or new condominiums. Yeah.
Thank you. Supervisor Engardio.
Yes, so it sounds like we're keeping the lines on page 19, lines 4 through 6, and we're striking no other provisions of this code.
Deputy City Attorney Brad Rusty, I would suggest that perhaps we instead say any ADU subject to conversion under this section is subject to Article 9 of this code, because I think that the intention is that all the requirements of Article 9 apply to these conversions, is what I'm hearing. And by calling out those specific sections, it might imply that the other ones aren't
well, it says that specifically.
What
it says no other provisions of Article 9. And I'm not sure why we would do that.
Right. So I concurred, keep it simple, and just, as you said, Deputy City Attorney.
Since we're doing this on the fly, any ADU subject to conversion under this section?
1396.8
shall
be subject to Article 9 of this code.
Okay. And is that approved as to form?
I can approve that as to form right now,
okay,
yes.
Okay, great. Okay, Mr. Omenberg, is that acceptable?
Yeah, I mean, it sure be great to be able to read it and it's make sure it's really saying what we want it to say.
It's six words. Shall be subject to Article 9.
Shall be subject to this, to Article 9.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, that sounds good. Okay. Not my way of doing business, but okay.
Okay. I've never done this before, but former chair, Supervisor Aaron Peskin, did it all the time on the fly. So I'm channeling. Okay, Ms. Merloni.
I'm so sorry, Chair Mulgar. I just wanted to make sure that, not being an expert in the administrative code, but that the language, no other provision of Article 9 of this code, I wonder if there is some other conflicting provision of Article 9 that this was trying to avoid. That's, just wanted to bring that up. Okay, thanks.
Mr. Russi?
I think I spoke with the attorney who drafted this today, and I thought the intention of these amendments was to remove this section entirely, which would have resulted in these conversions being subject to Article 9 and in its entirety.
Yeah.
So that was the amendment that was proposed initially by Supervisor Engardio, but I think for clarifying purposes, if you want to, accommodate the advocates here, I think it's achieving the same thing.
Right.
But it's what I proposed.
Okay. To restate it, if we were to remove it all together, it would everything would be subject to Article 9, but we are super clarifying it by specifically saying any ADU subject to conversion under this section, 1396.8, shall be subject to Article 9.
Right.
Okay. Great. Is that acceptable? All right, so I'd like to make a motion that we amend the legislation as just stated, and the amendments that were read into the record by Supervisor Engardio, reflecting the modifications that were recommended by the Planning Commission, and then that we move the legislation as amended as a committee report to the full board with a positive recommendation.
A motion has been offered by the chair that the ordinance be amended as presented and then further amended through the discussion that we've had here, and then recommended as amended as a committee report for consideration on tomorrow's agenda, July 1st, 2025. On that motion, Vice Chair Chen. Chen, aye. Member Mahmoud. Mahmoud, aye. Chair Melgar.
Aye.
Melgar, aye. Madam Chair, there are three ayes.
Thank you. That motion passes. Congratulations, Supervisor Engardio. Do we have any other items on our agenda today, Mr. Clerk?
There's no further business.
Okay. We are now adjourned. Thank you.